Welcome to another edition of Our World. I'm your host, Darryl Davis. Good morning, folks. Today is Sunday, December 14th, 2014. I appreciate all you who have been loyal listeners. It's always great to run into you in the churches and the malls, and just want to let you all know how much you're appreciated. Lot going on. Headlining world news is the Ferguson grand jury non-decision. And right on the heels of that, Eric Garner died on camera, chokehold, illegal chokehold, by the way. Coroner rules it a homicide, but for some reason, no indictment. But let's put all this into proper context. The reality is that the genie is out the bottle. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, America's going to have to come to grips with its racism. And, you know, for those of you sitting home listening to me right now, there's something very subconscious going on that makes you uncomfortable with that term. And that's part, that's a large part of the problem, not getting past a label, a word. We can't get past that, and because America does not want to have this conversation. There are many reasons why that is. Racism serves a socio-economic, political purpose. Without being delving too deeply into it or making it too complicated, because then I have to explain all of the points and it turns into a long show. But there are a lot of corporations that benefit from the prison industrial complex, from the prison for profit corporations that are out there. There are many, and it's a multi-billion-dollar operation, and it also serves these greedy corporations for slave labor. You heard me right, slave labor. And so it's extremely lucrative and profitable for domestic policy. And that explains why, with all of these killings, you know, and people say, well, you know, it's not racism, Darryl, it's, you know, the cops have a tough job. Really? Is it only tough when they're dealing with black people? Getting five cops surrounding one man who ain't going nowhere, who they said they knew, it's a tough job to jump on his back and put him in a chokehold when all they had to do was talk to him. Since they know him, they could have sent him an appearance ticket if he actually did anything worth their time. Michael Brown, all of the lies that the chief of police and the DA told the public, flat-out lies about what happened there. And see, you know, the reason those folks are uprising, there's a couple of reasons. One, there's legitimate anger and frustration, because when a whole community witnesses these murders time after time, and then they turn on their television set and see something that never happened, a lie, a fantasy fabricated by the law enforcement establishment, of course you're going to get outraged when you can't get justice and your children are being shot down. Of course you're going to have outrage. It's not like they're rioting because the Montreal Canadiens, you know, hockey team won the Stanley Cup. They're not rioting because a black man won the heavyweight championship back in 1900-something, or because they had a little pumpkin festival, as white folks do. No, no, no. And mind you, it doesn't take much to spark that anger. And now we are seeing that elements of law enforcement, provocateurs who've always been there. They were there in the 60s. They joined the Black Panther Party. They would do robberies to get the Panthers attacked and jailed and shot. And they would go free because they were double agents. And so we just discovered that the same thing is going on in Ferguson, that law enforcement people sparked the violence so that they can continue to say these people are just animals. But see, even that is a thin argument. People are supposed to uprise. I'm not calling for violence. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Violence is, the aggressor is the violent one. After all, these people are not murdering. They're not saying, let's go get revenge on white people. Let's go get revenge on police officers. They're not doing that. They're lashing out. And that does not make you an animal. What makes you an animal is to jump on someone's back and put them in a chokehold and strangle them to death. That's what makes you an animal. What makes you an animal is to blast a human being to pieces for no good reason. That's what makes you an animal. Not watching your children shot down day after freaking day after day after day and going to the district attorney and marching and picketing and registering to vote. Since the Michael Brown shooting, Ferguson registered voters went up 30%. And so even when they try to let the system work, they get insulted and called liars and animals and criminals. Of course they're going to rise up. White folks have done it for a lot less. We're not animals. And so when I say the genie is out the bottle, the whole world is outraged at the treatment of black people in America. Well, Darryl, you know, they must have been doing something interesting. How many white people do something, for example, pull a gun on a cop and go to jail alive, not even beat up? Or I remember when firefighters were demonstrating in New York City and got violent. Not one of them got beat up, shot, tear gassed, or anything. It's selective. It's only in our communities. This is on top of the war on drugs, you know, where, I think Reagan started this war on drugs, which was nothing more than a war on black communities. He didn't go after the mafia. You know, the mafia who's making the real money, the mafia who's causing the real deaths, thousands of deaths from drugs, organized crime. No. Reagan empowered local police departments to go in and harass and illegally detain and search black people because they may have a nickel bag of weed on them or a few vials of crack, which in itself devastates our community, keeps us destabilized, so it's very difficult to get organized and elect people who will do away with horn for the prison industrial complex. They're coming at us from all freaking directions and saying, what's wrong with your people? No. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you that you could be so ruthless that to turn a profit, you will criminalize a whole generation? Murdered, killed, beat, framed, put in cages again and again and again for profit in this good Christian society? The genie's out the bottle. Now, I've been saying this. I've been predicting this. I mean, I don't want to come off like Nostradamus. But from the first time there was the Occupy Wall Street movement, I saw this coming. And I warned people, be careful. Be careful, because now you're knocking on the front door of the real problem. And the real problem is this oligarchy. It's not American democracy. It's not the president of the United States who serves the oligarchy. But it's corporate greed and corruption. And you knocked on that door, Occupy Wall Street, and you pointed the whole world to where the real issues are. And I warn people, they're going to get very violent with this Occupy movement. Oh, if you want to save the whales, which, by the way, I'm for, if you want to do animal rights, if you want to clean the Hudson River, you know, you're safe. But once you start knocking on the door of the system that is hoarding all the wealth and stealing. Yes, stealing, because now Congress works for the corporations. That's why AT&T is paying off all these lawsuits. They're letting them steal from you, rob you, cheat you, charge for things you don't use. Profit, corruption, greed. Those are the enemies of America. And so when we see what's going on in Ferguson, and we see what's going on in Staten Island with you know, Eric Garner being choked to death, this is being protected by corporate money and corporate greed. Now, since the most loyal voting bloc of the Democratic Party is African Americans, you would think that the Democratic Party would be up in arms, demanding change, demanding prosecutions, would refuse to run district attorneys who allow this to go on. But why aren't they? Isn't it interesting that they're virtually silent now that the rest of the world, you know, they're trying to catch up with the rest of the world. They weren't too angry before Ferguson. You just see them walking out of Congress. This has been going on for 60 years. You didn't see them walking out. You didn't see them stop, I can't breathe. You didn't see them don't shoot. You didn't see any of that. Now, all of a sudden, they just finally realize that black people are being killed by police officers. Innocent black people. Innocent. Not charged with a crime. Not tried. Not put on trial. Innocent. The last statistic I saw, every 28 hours. Shot down dead by a cop every 28 hours. And that's just an average. Just often it's three or four in one day, and maybe a couple of days nothing happens. That's just the average. And so all of a sudden, the Democratic Party, you know, individuals in the party, publicity stunts. Oh, congressional staffers walked out of Congress, you know. Big pictures, national news, people on the floor of the House, stop, don't shoot, you know, publicity stunts. You want to impress me, demand congressional hearings into the killings of black people by police officers, and not don't stop there. Why aren't they being prosecuted? This district attorney in Ferguson should be brought up on criminal charges, period. Fraud, abuse of power, violating the law of grand juries by leaking information, talking about what went on in there. Why aren't they calling for that? You got a lot of lawyers in Congress. Because they're in bed with the prison industrial complex. They take money from corporations that benefit from black people being criminalized. That's the problem. The Democratic Party does not serve the people, and certainly not black people. They serve their own interest. And they're being outed. The genie's out of the bottle. Buddhist monks on the other side of the world are holding up signs in solidarity. Oppressed people in the Middle East are holding up signs in solidarity. The United Nations, lawyers' guilds, everybody can see it except average Joe White America. Defensive, in denial, justifying it, running around, looking for stuff to put on Facebook to show that black people are animals. That's what they're doing. If you look at the other side, if you look at their defense for these killings, and by the way, not only are they trying to post things that make blacks look like animals, therefore justifying these murders, they're fabricating. A lot of them, they're just making up. A lot of them, they're taking real stories and putting a lie on top of it. And even if those things were true, it still does not justify murdering unarmed, innocent black people every day. There's no justification for it. It's why isn't it happening to white kids? You know, as a frustrated scientist, I know what a control is. I know what an experiment is, and I know that Westchester County is really a great laboratory for racism in America. Excellent, because you don't have as many forces working on what you're trying to track. See, if you you know, if you, you know, I'm not going to go too deep, but if you know anything about chaos theory, you know that the more forces that act on something, the more chaotic it is. It makes it more difficult to see patterns. But in Westchester County, you're not in New York City. You know, there's less layers of complexity, so you can see things more clearly. And so when I drive through Bronxville or Scarsdale or Harrison in Westchester County, and I see white kids, white boys with their pants hanging off their butts and their baseball caps on backwards, and I don't see them being shot, aha! I don't see anybody calling for training of cops that serve in white communities. Aha! And by the way, on that issue of, oh, they just need better training, that's an interesting concept. Let me see. Eric Garner gets choked to death by a white cop on tape. Now, you know, as a lifetime martial artist, I don't think that that idiot cop needs any more training on how to choke somebody to death. I mean, he did it picture perfect. Picture perfect. I don't think he needs any more training for that. I watched the when the violence started, not the violence, the uprisings, because you have to be the aggressor. Look at the definition of violence, aggressor, designed to break people or destroy them, not defend yourself. And so when I see the tanks roll in, and I see snipers pointing rifles at American citizens, albeit African Americans, I don't think they need any more training. I don't think they just give you a sniper rifle and say, you know, put on all of this body armor, this military suit, and go out there. I think they got plenty of training. You know, anybody who's calling for better training now or more training is part of the problem. Get out the way. Just get out the way. The real men and women are on the job now. We don't want training. We want prosecution. When you murder somebody and you took an oath of office, you're supposed to go to jail. Oh, so Governor Cuomo and Attorney General Snyderman are calling for, you know, investigations and all. No. A police officer commits a crime, you prosecute him. Simple. It's not any more complex than that. Now, also, you know, again, it's not happening to white people. So it's not training. There's another layer on top of this. America puts no value on black lives, period. Now, I'm saying this in general. You know, when they talk about what happened in Nazi Germany, they say Germany. They don't, and despite the fact that a lot of people and movements oppose Hitler, Germans oppose Hitler, fought against them, lost their lives, helped Jews. But they don't say some, they say Germans. Because what at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is the majority, you know, the power structure. And so in America, when I say this, understand that I'm not saying all Americans, because there are a lot of good white progressives, there are a lot of good white anti-racist activists, but at the end of the day, the average American does not, and by the way, these people I just mentioned, they're also infected by it, as are black people. You got to remember that African Americans were enslaved here in America. Slaves. And you have to remember that this is supposed to be a nation founded on freedom and liberty. Freedom and liberty. Founded on religious freedom. And yet, in a Christian nation, and yet, you've enslaved a race of people. How do you justify that, America? Well, they're really barbarians. This is what was told and taught, and it's still taught. They're soulless. They were cannibals. We're civilizing them. You know, we're teaching them a good, worth ethic. These things are said by universities in America. And so this is what Americans are taught. If you grow up in America, this is what you taught, black and white. How many black people are ashamed to be black because of this these teachings that are still in our public schools? So by the time you go through the system, you don't have any value for black life. You could shoot a black person down. America won't shed a tear. You know, they show that on the news, and then they go to a commercial, and they show a starving puppy. America will cry. Something is wrong there. And they dehumanize us with pure lies. Pure lies. Now, let me give you an example of how we can help turn this around and have America valuing black lives as much as they value white lives. And it's going to take a long time, but you got to start somewhere. Rupert Murdoch, my friend, all the Egyptians you know are white, huh? You know this new movie, Exodus, is that the name of it? About, I think Christian Bale stars in it. I don't know if he's Moses or Ramses, you know, because I don't watch all white movies about black civilizations. You know, I don't support that. But people are critical. They're saying, hey, you know, Moses and Ramses and the Egyptians, it's all white cast. And people went to Twitter and was critical. I mean, after all, Hollywood's always saying, well, there's not a lot of roles for black people. You know, and so Rupert Murdoch went to Twitter and said, people are criticizing the movie. Every Egyptian I know is white. And see, there's the problem. Let's talk about that. You know, if you go to Australia, you're going to have to admit that all the Australians over there are white. But I got news for you. Australia was all black until white people went over there and slaughtered every Aborigine they could find. And the ones that survived got chased into the jungles. King Leopold put out a bounty. He would give, if you turned in ears, literally, if you turned in the black ears, they would give you money. They were paying people to exterminate. I hate that word. To wipe out a whole race of people. So, dear Rupert, if you go to Australia, you'd be right. All the Australians you know probably are white. But that doesn't mean that Australians originally were that way. Now, you go to Egypt today, I don't know if, I mean, there's a lot of dark-skinned people there. There are still people there as black as me. But in politics and finance and all of that, Rupert, the people you deal with, yeah. But it wasn't always that way. See the Egyptians that you portray on TV, some of the pharaohs, that you know, statues that remained, some of them were of a lighter hue. But the people of that time were blacker than I am. Egypt was nothing more but than an offshoot of Ethiopia. In fact, if you read what the scholars around those times said, Herodotus and others, you know, said that that's where Egyptians came from. In fact, you can go into deeper parts of Africa. You'll see where the science of pyramid making began. Not in Egypt. It reached its height, its apex in Egypt, which, by the way, is not in the Middle East, Rupert. It's in Africa. So Moses grew up in Africa. Moses was an African. At that time period, there were no white people there. I mean, Alexander the Great eventually came in, you know, and, started, you know, conquering parts of northern Africa and making babies and setting up cities and government there. And, you know, eventually Egyptians got lighter. But we're not talking about that period in history, Rupert. We're not talking about that period. We're talking about a period when Africans, there was nothing there but Africans. I mean, and by the way, during that time, and even in the time of Jesus, 1,000 years later, there was still only three types of people in that part of the world. Now, you know, looking at Jesus, who also grew up in Africa, if you're to believe the Bible, but there are only three types of people in the world at that time. And let's look at the example of Jesus. Well, Jesus, we know he wasn't a Roman. And you know, you can consult our scholars on this. Dr. John Henry Clark said this. He said, hey, look at the types of people that were in the world at that time. He wasn't a Roman and he wasn't a Greek. They only left Africans. Case closed, Rupert. And so I love Jeffrey Hunter, especially in Star Trek, but casting him as fair-skinned Jesus was ridiculous. But people didn't know this history because you had reputable scholars like Professor Beasted, who wrote these books about Egypt and Egyptology, who said, yes, Africa, there's dark-skinned people there, but those people who built those pyramids were dark-skinned Caucasians. Dark-skinned Caucasians. What is that, like a white person with a tan? I mean, this is what was being taught in the universities. And so when you see people like Rupert Murdoch, a media titan who dominates thought in America, and impressing his filters that the Egyptians, that Moses could it is totally impossible scientifically and even theologically for him to have been white. And the same thing for Ramses and for Jesus. Now, why is it necessary to make all these people white? Well, then because you run into a major contradiction when you get to slavery. Wait a minute. You mean that these people, that us Christians are enslaving the descendants of Moses and Jesus? The Falasha Jew, by the way, that was airlifted to Israel, black as coal, their ancestry can be traced back to King David, the original Jew. They're all shoots of the original Jewish people, Falasha Jews, black as night. Now, European Jews, you know, they came at a much later period in time. This is factual, documented, not even open to debate. But yet it's still being taught as truth, and it blocks Americans having respect for black people. It blocks black people being humanized again. The lie continues. And this is just one short example. You know, only because this movie is in the news am I using this example. But before we were enslaved, before Asians and Europeans had went into Africa and literally burned down cities that had universities, walls lined in gold and precious stones, the Osirica, massive, massive universities, 500 B.C., 300 B.C., civilizations that spanned the golden ages of Egypt. America's 200 years old. Those dynasties lasted 1,000 years. We have no concept of that. And destroyed by robbers and grave robbers and looters and going in there and instead of saying let's barter, let's trade, let's negotiate. No, they went in there murdering, pillaging, raping, and taking. Stolen legacy. Aristotle did not live long enough to write all this stuff attributed to him. He would have to live up to be about 200 years to be able to have written the stuff attributed to him. Aristotle went into Egypt with Alexander the Great, sent back writings on philosophy that were written by black African people, sent it back with his name on it that he wrote it. He interpreted some of it. I'll give him that credit, but he didn't write it. Didn't originate with him, these concepts. Stolen legacy. I think the author's name is John Jackson. Look it up. The Destruction of Black Civilization. Chancellor Williams, I believe the scholar's name is, where he documents how these invasions destroyed African civilizations and cities. They had medicine, they had surgeons. And I'm talking 1,000 years ago. Now, I'm not talking, you know, even 300. I'm not even talking about the time of Christ. I'm talking about 1,000 years before that. Medicine, science, they knew about stars that you couldn't see from the naked eye. Black African people that have been transformed by American lies into beasts. And so, you know, when people say, well, Darryl, you know, black, why do you need black history in the schools? That's racist. This is what we're up against. That's not racism. What, you know, what's racism is everything that was invented by white people. Everything that was built was invented, was built by white people. Everything that was created or written was written by white people. That's racism. See, because if it was true, it wouldn't be racism. But it's not true. As a matter of fact, it's not even close to being true. It's a big lie. Give us our due. Stop denying us our humanity. So young white kids grow up in America, and they're taught that they're above the law, that they're special, that they're God's chosen, that they're defending the world against tyranny, and they have a higher calling. And their only contact with black people is in school, where we're beasts and slaves, and then on television, where we're portraying some robber coming through the window to rape your wife. Give this man a gun and a badge and send him into that community? And by the way, not every cop is just a cop. Some of them belong to the Aryan Nation. Some of them belong to the Klan. Are we to close our eyes to that and act like that doesn't exist? Again, as a frustrated scientist, we have to look at all factors. You know, we can't just, have a theory and then just put together data that supports the theory. That's not science. That's lunacy. And that's what's going on here in America. Black history is important. You know, if you want to be, if you don't, you know, if you're so afraid of that term, you know, black, or, you know, it offends you, call it honest history. Just call it honest history. I love Alexander Dumas' writings. I've read Three Musketeers, The Man in the Iron Mask, excellent, excellent books. Black Man, Alexander Hamilton, Black Man. These are all people that some of y'all would be calling the N-word if they were alive today. There are actually pictures of them and portraits of them drawn from life. They weren't white and pointed-nosed. Big, thick African features. Why was it necessary to Europeanize them, to continue the big lie, to justify enslaving us? Well, slavery's over, and you're still justifying dehumanizing us. And you're bringing racist people into our communities with guns. What do you think is going to happen? We got to put an end to this, and we have to turn it around. You're listening to Our World on Real Country. I'm your host, Darryl Davis. Yeah, I just went through this long 35-minute rant about what's going on in this world. And at the end of the day, I have to tell you that it's tragic that black lives are being lost. And, you know, I just want to say that any life that's lost is tragic. Black, white, Latino, Asian. Tragic. But when these things happen to other races, there's prosecutions, there's arrest. They're not happening nowhere near the tragic rate that's going on in our community. And so that's why that is my focus. But that said, you know, you have my hometown of Peekskill, which the city government reeks, smells of racism. And, you know, you can always tell when you got somebody in a conflict because they resort to lying, bullying, violence, and and eventually acting like there's no constitution. And so, you know, one of the things that happened in Peekskill, you know, I've reported on the Peekskill Housing Authority. Turns out everything we said was right and true, that Harold Phipps was out to destroy public housing and phase it out with the protection of the Peekskill Democratic Party with Mary Foster. When we organized to save public housing in Peekskill, they came after us with fake lawsuits. You know, I was hauled into federal court, taken into police custody several times, illegally banned. My partner was physically attacked at a council meeting. They did everything they could to destroy our human rights movement. What does that say about them? But one thing that got kind of obscured was that we had two struggles going on. Housing Authority got most of the attention, but we were also fighting for the rights of African American men that work for the city of Peekskill. Under Mayor Mary Foster and Deputy Mayor Drew Claxton and Councilwoman Mary Beth McGowan and the rest of them, black men were being called the N-word on the job. We had one guy give me a letter to read at the city council meeting. He said for the 13 or 14 years he was there, he's had to deal with nothing but racism. His name is Cornell Hammonds. He had me read that letter at the council meeting 4 years ago. Another person, Tyrone Welch, showed up at the council meetings himself and spoke a few times about his treatment, only because he wanted to get training, state certified, and work in the water treatment plant. Now, there were others. There was about six men that we were representing. And so we met with Mayor Foster and the city manager at the time, Rick Finn, and said that, you know, we have these issues. And they said, well, we need names of these people or we can't do anything. And so we gave a couple names, and they were retaliated against immediately. And so after the election, after Foster and McGowan went down in flames and Torres, I had hoped that the city would change direction and root out. This is institutional racism, by the way. See, because one of the things that Foster and her clique did was they exaggerated my allegations. They were trying to turn the white community against me by saying that I'm calling all of them racist. And what I was very specific that I was talking about city government being run by people, by the way, who Peekskill is not their hometown, like it is mine. They don't love that community the way I do. These are colonialists. They move to Peekskill. They want to take over this community and push out others, mostly black, mostly people living in public housing. End of discussion. That's who they are. And so they seize the mayor's office, and they use the police, you know, just like any military dictator would, to rough up, to harass, to intimidate opposition. And that's what Mary Foster and Drew Claxton did in Peekskill. We defeated that and toppled them. But like any good tyrant, they said, okay, well, we lost the election, but we're not handing over power. So Drew Claxton made herself, because there's still four Democrats to three on the mayor and council. And so she appointed herself deputy mayor, which the mayor was supposed to do with her voting advantage. And she named herself, I think, Speaker of the Council, some ridiculous title. I saw Mike Morey on some cable TV show saying, well, we still have a majority, so we're still running the city. Well, that's not democracy. And more than that, that is total disrespect for the voting population, who clearly voted for a new direction. And so what this majority of four has done was just tried to trip up the new mayor. He has no power, not much, because he needs one more seat. So he can have the 4-3 majority and get on with doing what the citizens voted him to do. Democratic Party is still stifling that. That's what tyranny does. They don't always go away without a fight. They're not there for the people. Otherwise, why would they have been lying and misleading the community for 4 years? I said at time after time, if you don't stop Mr. Phipps, there's not going to be nothing left of the Housing Authority. I said time after time that Mary Foster is bankrupting the city. It's on record. Once they all got defeated, the media came in and said, hey, Housing Authority is almost bankrupt. They're back on the trouble list. There's all this money that's unaccounted for. Darryl was right. Frank Catalina, the new mayor, gives his State of the City address, and it comes out that they went through a $12 million surplus, blew through it by spending money they didn't have, borrowing and paying for consultants and fighting lawsuits that should have been settled because Mary Foster is petty and vindictive and wants revenge and punish people. I said all of that for 2 years. Darryl was right again. And so with this issue, there's a guy, a foreman, supervisor, something named Vinny Nardone, who he's the guy that wants revenge because Tyrone Welch did not go away, said he wants better for his life, for his family. So he went to school to get his training, just like white boys did. Took them 6 months, took Tyrone over a year, because they kept stalling, they kept tripping him up. When he passed the test, they told him they lost his paperwork, he'd have to take the test again. Initially, when he said he wanted training, they humiliated him by putting him out on the highway. They gave him a bucket of tar and said, here's your training, we're going to train you to plug holes in the highway. This is what this young man has went through. And Vinny Nardone is the culprit. He thinks he has more power now because he says his nephew is Vinny Vesey Jr., who's on the city council. And so after all of this, after Tyrone getting his training, being humiliated, they turn around and tell him he's going back on the back of the garbage truck. Now, that's racism, by the way. That's institutional racism. Now, when he complains about being discriminated against, they form a committee among themselves and then investigate and says, oh, unfounded, that's institutional racism. Now, Vinny Nardone had the audacity to walk up to me in Peekskill. I was in front of a restaurant. Let me ask you a question. Are you for all the people or are you just for black people? And he was talking about Tyrone. Now, I'm not even going to talk about the man's IQ to ask me a question like that, but I think Mr. Nardone, your nephew, Vinny Vesey Jr., I think he looks kind of white to me, and yeah, I did help him get elected. Interesting that you only see black people. Very, very interesting. Yeah, Frank Catalina also looks kind of white. Catalina, I don't know. That name, you know, sounds white to me. You know, I help white people. But all you see, but you have a problem me helping black people. The issue is with you, bro. Vinny Nardone is a racist. He's going after an African-American who just wants to better his situation. Now, taking it off of the personal note, I ran into virtually every African-American that works for the city of Peekskill in DPW, water treatment plant, wherever they are, and they don't know that they've all come to me. Maybe one didn't, maybe two, because I'm not sure how many there are. I know there's not a lot, but virtually every one of them has stopped me. Mr. Davis, you know, from the time they hire a black person, they start a paper trail to get rid of them. Mr. Davis, all they let us do is push a broom. They won't give us any training, so we can't move up, i.e. Tyrone Welch. And this is institutional racism. And you know, what drives people crazy is they always justify it. It's always your fault. Oh, well, we did an investigation, and you're wrong. Again, all you black people are wrong. Every black person here is wrong. And that's what we're up against. And then you go to the mayor and say, this is dead wrong. well, I understand he's filed a grievance and the human relations. Hey, man, don't send us to any more of these racially stacked commissions. Do the right freaking thing. See, there's only rules. I always tell black people, anytime you meet with a politician or your employer and they pull out the rule book, duck, because they're getting ready to throw it at you. This is in a town that hired a man named Anthony Ruggiero, who was in planning department, as a city manager. Ruggiero does not meet the qualifications by the charter. But that's okay, because he's white. Tyrone Welch had to jump through hoops, take training, use his own time, which the white guys didn't have to do, to get his certification. Had to take over a year. You know, and when he passed the test, they lose the paperwork, according to them. And he, you know, it's a problem. But, you know, you got a city manager there acting. Before him, you had a city manager, Brian Haverneck, who also, according to the charter, not qualified. But that's okay, because he's white. And it stinks to high heaven. It's so bad. This city government has sat in the stench of racism so long, they don't even smell it. The whole world is up in arms saying enough is enough. And you know what Peekskill's doing? They're appointing people like George Coniglio to the Human Relations Commission, who said that Michael Brown got what he deserved, who said that George Zimmerman was right. This is who they put on the Human Relations Commission in Peekskill, and then say there's no racism here. Ah, Peekskill, Peekskill. Well, look what they've done to my song. Well, the genie's out of the bottle. You know, I get calls and people inbox me on Facebook and what have you. D, this is not the town we grew up in. And I remind them, no, because people who don't live here, who see Peekskill as an opportunity to buy a house, live here for 5 or 10 years and sell it, they want to push us out. Those of us who are not in the income bracket that they want in Peekskill, those of us who they say make Peekskill look bad because you got all those people hanging out on Main Street in front of Bowman, that's who's running city government. Oh, we toppled them. Vicious fight. We beat them. But they're still there. Drew Claxton now is the head of this clique, and I know some of y'all go to the Bean Runner. I know y'all help keep them in business. You might as well be doing business with apartheid. And by the way, there's nothing controversial about what I'm saying. The fact of the matter is that Drew Claxton did vote for a resolution to ban clapping at council meetings. As more and more people came and supported us at these council meetings, as we stood up for these black men and against gentrification of public housing, I'd get up and speak, or one of our supporters would get up and speak, and the audience would clap. They outlawed clapping. It's not like any of this is being made up. When we had our first tenant association meeting scheduled at the Kiley Center, 4 police cars showed up and said, this is an illegal meeting. An illegal meeting. For residents of public housing to want to get organized and uplift their community? Where is that illegal except in a fascist nation? Peekskill. There's nothing controversial about what I'm saying. I'm not making any of this up. It's all documented. We got video. We got camera photos. It's all documented. We don't want these fights. I have emails to Bishop Champion, who was the head of the Peekskill Area Pastors Association. Before all of this went public, I reached out to him and said, will you let us come before the organization, hear us out, and mediate? He wouldn't do it because he was hooking for the Democratic Party. Chased him around. Before Bishop Champion, every clergy person that ever chaired that position always heard out anybody who had a problem or a grievance. Not Champion. I sent letters to the human relations chairman, Reverend Michael Tino. We actually had 3 meetings, 3 different black men testify before his commission about the discriminatory treatment. The fourth meeting was scheduled. Reverend Tino disappeared. Wouldn't return phone calls, wouldn't return emails. We don't know if they ever met again. We tried everything to mediate. Then we did have the Justice Department, got them to come in. They didn't want to mediate. They only wanted to mediate things that were already our constitutional rights. And I said, no. We fought. And then we had another so-called mediation in Peekskill. Drew Claxton and Mary Beth McGowan represented the city. I said, all I want is a third party, maybe the Martin Luther King Institute or Pastors Association, to come in, hear both of our sides, and make a decision, and I'll live with it. They said no. And they said the housing authority is not up for discussion. Well, isn't that why we're here? No, they played games. It was there where the highway, so guess what? Mary Foster, Mary Beth McGowan, you got the highway. We got a growing movement. Vinnie Nardone, I help all the people, bro. I don't know what your problem is with black people, but you're asking for this, you got it. See you soon, bro. That's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to Our World on Real Country.